From the National Humanities Center, this is Wayne Pond with Soundings, conversations featuring scholars and visitors at the National Humanities Center.
Afro-American studies is something that can be taught by black and white people.
Right.
I think that, and it can be criticized by both. The criticism or the teaching, the worth of the teaching or the worth of the criticism, isn't dependent upon the race of the person. What is dependent upon is the consciousness of the person, the attitude the person mm-hmm. has towards learning, towards knowledge.
Welcome to Soundings, Modern African History and Afro-American Studies in the United States. Those are the topics this week on Soundings. My guests are Harold Marcus of Michigan State University and Jonella Butler of Smith College. First on this edition of Soundings, a conversation with Harold Marcus, followed by a discussion with Jonella Butler. In 1986, Harold Marcus completed a fellowship year at the National Humanities Center, during which he worked on a forthcoming history of modern Ethiopia. Harold Marcus is also the author of The Greening of African History, an article recently published by the National Endowment for the Humanities. Here is Harold Marcus.
Well, I think that humanities wanted an article to sum up the state of Africanist historiography mm-hmm. to date. And as I reflected upon its development since World War II, I realized that we started out with a view of African history, a view by troglodytes, if you will, that there wasn't any, or the only thing that was worthy in African history dated from the period of colonialism up, to today, a time when African history and historiography is a flourishing sub-industry within the historical profession, where we have hundreds of scholars working in a variety of areas, not only in Africa itself, but abroad in England and in the United States mm-hmm. in particular.
Are you telling me, Harold Marcus, that the doing of African history after a fashion parallels the treatment of Africa by the West? Is there an analogy there?
Oh, I think that that's accurate. I think that certainly while the imperialists controlled Africa, they tried to control African history, and they saw mm-hmm. African history in ways that was subordinated to the larger European history.
Mm-hmm.
And as Africa has become independent, as it has become increasingly important and also chaotic, we are interested in viewing it for its own sake. In other words, we're looking at Africa for qua Africa, not in relationship to Europe. Mm-hmm. Although certainly the relationship to Europe and America is important, and there are people who study that.
How has this transition, this greening of African history, how has that been received by the historians? I take it that, it wouldn't be monolithic. Some would welcome it. Some would want to put it down. Others would have qualified responses to it.
Even in my own university, where African history is an important subfield, we turn out many, many PhDs, and we have distinguished Africanist historians in the department. There are colleagues of mine in American and European history who still do not understand the complexity of African history, who still do not understand the extent of scholarship that is available on Africa. They tend to think that somehow or other we're only dealing with 25 books or a very small library, without understanding in any way the large number of journals that now come out, not only in the United States and Europe, but in Africa itself,
mm-hmm.
the hundreds of books that are issued each year, the small armies of scholars that are investigating the archives and doing oral history, etc. So there is, what I'm saying, there is ignorance even in the academic field, and you can imagine that in the broader population, the ignorance is deeper.
What are some of the issues that historians in the 1980s are looking at with respect to Africa? At one point, for example, in this paper that you've written for Humanities, you say that race, of course, is important, but it has to be taken, in tandem or in combination with economic kinds of things?
Right.
How do we figure that out?
Well, that's my own prejudice. I want to point out to you that I am a materialist. I will always look first at the economic environment and then see what moves from that particular environment, the substructure, if you will. I think the issue of the 1980s and the 1990s, and probably through the turn of the century, is going to be the issue of South Africa and our understanding of South Africa.
And is that a money understanding, an economic thing?
I think to see the South African situation as only a racial crisis is to misunderstand that what we're seeing is a crisis of capitalism in South Africa, where those who have most of the capital in the country do not want to give it over to the majority.
Uh-huh.
And this is a phenomenon that is as old as man itself. I mean, I can take you back to Henry VIII's destruction of the monasteries
right.
And convents in England to get his hands on capital.
Is this crisis of capitalism, Harold Marcus, did the Africans invent and inflict that upon themselves? Is that something that is coming back to haunt Western economic doctrines and economic theories? Do we have a combination there?
Well, Karl Marx himself said that capitalism is the most creative form, mode of production that the world has ever seen, and that is, he said that in terms of the future, which would be socialism. But you've got to understand that capitalism has been extremely productive in South Africa, and it's taken people who were essentially subsistence agriculturalists, and it's brought them into the 20th century, to be sure.
So that's a good thing.
Well, that is a good thing. And the Africans are reacting like 20th century people.
Yeah.
They want unions. They want political rights. They
right.
want access to power. They want access to industry and business. And so what we're seeing is in part certainly racial, because there are prejudices and misconceptions. But we're also seeing an ordinary unfolding of political and economic competition. And
so what are we going to do? Are we going to sit back and I don't mean to say indifferently or passively, but do we simply allow the passage of time so that economics, as it has occurred in the West, will occur in Africa? It is simply a maturing process that it's impossible to speed up.
Well, to move away from the South African situation, I can take you north to countries like Ethiopia, which believe that Western economic development has failed them. They
mm-hmm.
tried it. And now they're looking towards socialist forms of economic development. They're looking at the National Democratic Revolution, the revolutionary road to development.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it's inevitable that Africans are going to allow the process merely to happen. They are going to experiment in every conceivable way to attain development and political maturity. The Africans themselves are aware of the chaos that has happened in Africa since the period of independence. They have studied it. They are trying very, very hard to come up with new political settlements, new economic policies.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're going to see a very volatile and changing Africa in the next generation.
Well, apropos of that kind of comment, Harold Marcus, apart from South Africa, which grabs the headlines and you know, is very much on many people's minds, are there countries, is there a country in Africa that we could look to where we can say, here is some hope, here is a model for what, who's to say what should happen, but, you know, by consensus, what might be the best sort of thing to happen?
Well, people look at Zimbabwe, particularly at Michigan State University, because my African Study Center is very, very interested in Zimbabwe. We have mm-hmm. a relationship with the university there, so there's a constant exchange of scholars. So I would say that we, perhaps at Michigan State, we know Zimbabwe better than any other African country. And there is certainly a leftist rhetoric, a socialist rhetoric on the part of the government, but yet the government is very, very carefully following a controlled capitalistic development in terms of agriculture and industry. And there doesn't seem to be the same kinds of economic strife, at least outwardly, that you find in other parts of Africa. There are some that would look at Senegal, not Senegal as much as Cote d'Ivoire, Ivory Coast,
mm-hmm.
as an example of controlled capitalistic development. But there are some who would say, well, that's because it's a neo-colonial situation. The French are still very, very much in control. What the historians are doing are really tracing the lines of analysis back to colonialism, not looking so much at the European side of it, but the African side of it, so that we can get some understanding of where the Africans are today mm-hmm. and where they might inevitably go. And that's also part of this emerging historiography. There is a whole industry in Southern African studies, for example, looking at the transformation of the African subsistence agriculturalist into first the peasant, then the worker, and now people striving for political maturity and power.
Mm-hmm. Harold Marcus, let's conclude our conversation. We've been talking about this article, The Greening of African History, that you have done for the National Endowment for the Humanities. On an earlier edition of Soundings, you remarked that the level of knowledge or the ignorance of the American public with respect to Africa is really very, very frightening. Now, I know that it's only been a couple of years since that has occurred. Have you changed your mind at all? Is this greening of African history occurring just in the academy? Should we be encouraged by that alone?
Well, I would say that if nothing else, the series on Africa by Ali Mazrui that's appeared on public television mm-hmm. Will have given some people a more accurate view of Africa than they've had before. But Ali Mazrui himself, given the peculiarity of his artistry, has distorted contemporary Africa for his artistic reasons. And I think that that's on the negative side. But the positive side is he's made people aware of Africa yeah. as never before, just as Roots, when it was on television years ago, made yep. people aware. So there's less actual ignorance, but there is a depth of ignorance in the school systems and in the universities and among our people that's going to be very, very hard to break through.
Quick footnote to that response, Harold Marcus. You say the artistic viewpoint. Do you mean the political or the ideological viewpoint?
No, I mean artistic. I think that Ali Mazrui is he's a great intellectual and a great artist, and mm-hmm. he is framing a portrait of Africa. In that sense, what he is putting on the large frame is his view of Africa, his impressions of Africa. I'll give you one example of that. It annoyed me at the time, but I now appreciate why he did it. In the very first show, Ali Mazrui is seen in one of his, he wears a lot of nice shirts. I wonder where he got them made. But he's sitting in the crook of a tree that's dead, and he's overlooking a forest that is dying, and you can see the, if you will, it's an almost desert encroachment. And he says, if we Africans hadn't strayed from the teachings of our forebears, this natural ecological disaster might not have occurred.
Mm-hmm.
And here he's talking about African religion and the respect for nature and so on. When in fact, that forest was created by overpopulation, by desiccation, over which man could have no particular control, by overgrazing, by overfarming, and all the myriad problems that are associated with development and growth in Africa that really would be very, very hard for traditional African faith to withstand. That's what I mean by his artistry. His artistry sometime got in the way of the facts. Now, I will say this in his defense, about 5 minutes later in that particular show, he does indeed point out the overpopulation that brings in desertification and other problems into Africa. But that's his artistry mm-hmm. that comes out there. And it's a distortion. It gives people a, again, more romantic view of what's happening in Africa than is absolutely necessary. He's not acting as a social scientist. He's acting as a romantic artist.
Harold Marcus is a professor at Michigan State University. During a recent fellowship year at the National Humanities Center, Harold Marcus worked on a forthcoming history of modern Ethiopia. The program is Soundings. This is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. Soundings on African History and Afro-American Studies in the United States continues now with a conversation featuring a recent visitor at the National Humanities Center. Jonella Butler is a professor of literature at Smith College, where she also directs the program in Afro-American Studies. Here is Jonella Butler.
Well, in almost the 17 years that African-American studies has been around as a field of study in colleges and universities, I think we have never really had our heyday as Afro-American studies. I think there's still a good deal of confusion as to work done in disciplines on black people, about mm-hmm. people of African ancestry, as opposed to an interdisciplinary field of study mm-hmm. about people of African ancestry. And that seems to be a difficult concept to get across in colleges and universities, simply because of the discipline departmental structure of the university.
Are we talking here about separating things in terms of history, literature,
yes,
philosophy?
Yes, exactly, exactly. Uh-huh. And what Afro-American studies does, as women's studies, as American studies does, is to look at those areas, those disciplines, the traditional disciplines, from an interdisciplinary standpoint. Mm-hmm. And right there, you're at war with the structure of the university. However, there exists now about 200 programs across, or departments across the country. Mm-hmm. My preference is clearly departmental status, simply because in the academic politics, etc., the institutionalizing of a program, one needs to have departmental status.
Mm-hmm. Is there a turf war here? Do you sense that?
I think what's happening that's a real interesting question. What's happening, I think, in the past year is that a turf war is coming to the fore uh-huh. in this way. When I began teaching, and I am one of the generation of first who are professors in predominantly white institutions teaching something called Afro-American studies. Uh-huh. Let's take literature for an example. It was not really accepted to teach Afro-American literature. I began as part of an English department doing that. The field of African studies brings to us African literature. Mm-hmm. And very often in Afro-American studies, we do diaspora studies, so it makes sense that, for instance, I teach Afro-Caribbean, comparative Afro-Caribbean, Afro-American, African literature. Now English departments are beginning to discover, aha, a new frontier mm-hmm. is what is called Commonwealth literature, just as one example. Commonwealth literature includes the literature of the British Commonwealth, Australia, New Zealand, India, for example, the Caribbean, African countries that were part of the Commonwealth. If we take that connotation, that definition of those literatures, then you have an English language, English culture definition base.
Mm-hmm. Well, now wait, race seems to be, getting mm-hmm. lost
getting,
in that mixture.
It can get lost in that mixture.
And it would seem to me that would be one of your, not necessarily a goal, but, mm-hmm. you know, that would be high on your list of things
to bring to the
attention of undergraduates.
Exactly. Uh-huh. Race gets lost and culture gets lost. What happens is the paradigm for looking at this literature is often, particularly that of African peoples, then becomes colonialism. Mm-hmm. As so Chinua Achebe begins to be seen in that context as a Commonwealth writer and not the Nigerian writer that he is, mm-hmm. based in African culture, who happens to be writing in English, but who is writing about literature that is African-based, Nigerian-based, mm-hmm. and British-based in terms of colonialism. So the question that I think committees on academic policy begin to ask when an English department proposes a course, an Afro-American studies department proposes a course, okay, where does this belong?
Right.
You can make the arguments either way, and then academics like to say that they don't like to make decisions based on ideology, but essentially we begin to have to have discussions about ideology
right. And
exactly where we're going to place people in the canons of literature. So I think that Afro-American studies has begun to slowly carve a place for itself mm-hmm. in the academic arena, but we still are plagued with the issue of validity. Mm-hmm. And I travel a lot across the country. In the past few years, I have done considerable consultancies, serving on task force to examine departments when universities are trying to decide if they want to keep them, strengthen them, or whatever, or work with women's studies and black studies and mm-hmm. seeing where those two fields converge. And I can experience a considerable amount of dismay when I speak to deans and provost and chairs of other departments who are still asking the same questions that were asked 17 years ago. Is this really a valid field of study? Mm-hmm. Despite all the literature that is coming out in all the disciplines, whether about people of African ancestry the world over.
So the test is going to be one of time and not necessarily immediate goals.
Exactly.
What how would you characterize what's going on in Afro-American studies? Where's the best work being done? History, literature, mm-hmm. philosophy? You began mm-hmm. our conversation by talking about the sort of the jargon here is multidisciplinary.
Right.
help me with that.
All right. I think the best work and the most prominent work, the publicized work, is in history and in literature.
Mm-hmm.
And historians have long time had a long-standing interest on the history of people of African ancestry. It hasn't necessarily meant that they approach this in an interdisciplinary fashion. So we have a whole area of American history that is Black history. However, some of the works of historians now who are coming out of American/Afro-American studies is becoming more increasingly aware of the popular culture, the social historian, that whole movement that began in the 60s, etc., the revisionists, etc., have apprised themselves of anthropology, have mm-hmm. apprised themselves of the works of Melville Herskovitz, etc. So we find John Blasingame revising and expanding his work on the slave community. And we find that, for instance, in that example, an exciting move from the belief that much scholarship was based on, until the 60s, that there were no African transformations in Afro-American culture, that there really wasn't something called Afro-American culture. We were largely imitative of white American culture.
Right.
That has affected history.
Mm-hmm.
It's affected literature. And so I think that the criticism in literature is a very fertile area and a booming area, whether you're looking at the Afro-American experience here in the United States or the Afro-Caribbean, Afro-Brazilian,
mm-hmm.
Lusophone, African, and Brazilian literatures, Francophone literatures, Anglophone literatures.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's just a whole new frontier.
Do you think that this stuff matters to, let's use a hopeless generalization, the American people? Do you think that Joe Sixpack out on the street, to the extent that he has a son or daughter in college, is interested in the kind of thing that you do, running an Afro-American studies program?
One thing you said earlier, this is going to take, have to stand the test of time, and
mm-hmm.
it's going to take time for things to develop. I think the interest of the average American in Afro-American studies is peaked, is very much coming into being. It will take time. The more that we are highlighted, the more that people see this and hear the term Afro-American studies, first of all, and begin to see aspects of it that have them understand it's just not about race relations,
uh-huh.
that we're talking about essentially a very vibrant, important component of American culture that has affected every single one of us. So when we talk about, for instance, in an academic sense, anthropologically, the carryovers of African cultures, the very fact that some of our words can be, that we use every day, can be traced directly to Afro-American, to African sources. The word tote, for instance,
uh-huh.
so we think of tote bag,
right.
or something like that. Banjo, I mean, things
mm-hmm.
like that become fascinating and accessible to people. I think also when academics gradually is affecting, whether the link is very clear or not, is affecting what occurs on Broadway, what occurs on television, then people begin again to have a different accessibility and a different understanding. So it's not seen as something that is just politically chauvinistic
mm-hmm.
Of a group of people who are maybe becoming a smaller minority in this country.
Do you have critics, as it were, inside the Afro-American studies programs? Let me be just mm-hmm. very blunt with
mm-hmm.
you. Do you have Black people who are criticizing Black people about what's going on in Afro-American studies, so that you're not necessarily going to have a racial tinge to a criticism
exactly.
when it comes across the
mm-hmm.
table toward you?
I think that's true. You see, Afro-American studies is something that can be taught by Black and white people.
Right.
I think that, and it can be criticized by both. The criticism or the teaching, the worth of the teaching or the worth of the criticism isn't dependent upon the race of the person. What is dependent upon is the consciousness of the person, the attitude the person mm-hmm. has towards learning, towards knowledge, and as to whether or not one is willing to step back and really critique at the core mm-hmm. Western civilization and American civilization, to ask questions about the definitions we have established and that we're comfortable with. The definitions of people, mm-hmm. the categories of movements, the way we look at history, the way we speak of literature. What is American literature, for instance? Mm-hmm. If you're beginning to say, the literature that I studied at in college generally was Anglo-American literature, not really American literature. If you're willing to do that kind of thing, then you, whether you're black or white, are a good candidate for understanding what we're talking about in Afro-American studies.
So you're not exactly a voice in the wilderness. There is a choir there, but it needs to be more fully mm-hmm. orchestrated.
Mm-hmm. I think, and part of the choir is Asian. Mm-hmm. Asian American, part of the choir is Native American. And one of the fascinating things that's beginning to be recognized that, as we know, as black studies came into its own in the 60s and really grew in the 70s, we have in the academic arena the growth of ethnic studies, meaning not as it means on the East Coast, immigrant studies, but more as it means on the West Coast, really American ethnic studies, mm-hmm. including European ethnic groups and what we call racial ethnic groups, Asian Americans, Native Americans, Hispanic Americans. There's a National Association of Ethnic Studies, which has meetings every year, which explores comparatively issues of American ethnic groups in the academic arena. So we have a body of knowledge that is growing that, number one, is focusing on various ethnic groups within American society, and a body of knowledge that looks at these groups comparatively, mm-hmm. Which tells us a great deal about American society. I think you have to, one component of Afro-American studies classes, by the nature of the content, is that it encourages critical thinking mm-hmm. in students. We have students who come out then who are excited to take active roles in society. They become lawyers. They become, our majors frequently double major. Sometimes they don't. They are single majors in Afro-Am. They go off and go to medical school. Mm-hmm. They become managers for IBM, etc. But I'm also eager to say, I think there's one mark of success, not only at Smith, but of Afro-American studies in itself, is that as I travel across the country, I'm finding at some of the smaller private colleges, black alums are organizing themselves to establish endowment funds for Afro-American studies, and that is happening at Smith College right now.
Jonella Butler directs the program in Afro-American studies at Smith College. The program is Soundings. This is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. For a cassette copy of Soundings on African History and Afro-American Studies, send $3 to the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina, 27709. Soundings would like to hear from you. The address again is the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina, 27709. Next week on Soundings, conversations about the English writers William Shakespeare and William Blake. My guests will be Maynard Mack of Yale University and Eileen Ward of New York University. Until next week, this is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. Support for Soundings comes from the National Endowment for the Humanities.
Listen to Soundings. This is Kim Nielsen at the National Humanities Center, inviting you to join Wayne Pond this week for conversations about African history and Afro-American studies in the United States. Wayne's guests are Harold Marcus of Michigan State University and Jonella Butler of Smith College. The Greening of African History. Some answers and insights this week on Soundings from the National Humanities Center on this station.